check on the welfare of those children. Child protection is, of course, back in the spotlight after a government-commissioned review was released, and we know many of you have been horrified and saddened again by what we've heard. We're continuing the conversation on this, and if you've had something that you would like to add, do give us a call, 1300 222 891, or the text line, of course, 0467 922 891. The chair of the parole board, Francis Nelson KC, spoke to David Bevan on Mornings earlier today, and here's some of what she had to say.
A significant number of people who commit crime start off as victims when they're children, because they are neglected or they're in dysfunctional families or they're deprived in many ways. And I don't know how many decades I've been saying it, but if people are really serious about reducing the crime rate, early intervention and dealing with those big socioeconomic problems is the way to start. And it just seems to me, listening to your program this morning, it's typical. Let's have an inquiry and let's put a Band-Aid on something. Whether the police go around, and for goodness sake, we haven't got enough police anyway, knocking on doors with social workers, the bottom line is, are there appropriate resources to tackle the problem and deal with it? So, you know, what actually are we going to do in the way of resources? Are we going to have more residential care? Is there going to be more family intervention? It just seems to me this is another Band-Aid on a big problem. And I would guarantee that most of those 500 children will fall into the criminal justice system. And they in turn will produce other children, and they in turn will have a dysfunctional and deprived childhood. So it's a generational problem. It's time to put a stop to it.
You sound very frustrated, Frances.
Well, I do, because I've been saying it for 39 years, David. And it's very hard to get a 30-year-old man who's committing serious crimes, where there are people hurt seriously at times, to change a pattern of behaviour he learnt in his dysfunctional and deprived childhood from the age of five. And that's the task we have to do. And we're at the end of the system. And it's not the system that's going to fix the problem. It's actually the social environment.
That was Frances Nelson KC there, of course, chair of the parole board. She was speaking with David Bevan this morning. So what work is there being done at the moment with children at risk and their parents? Well, Nadia Berganetti is Chief Executive Officer and founder of the Riley Foundation, which works with families on navigating the child protection system. She's with us now. Hi, Nadia.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. I want to get to what the work that you do and what more we can do as a whole. But firstly, can you just outline for us what the Riley Foundation actually does on a day-to-day basis?
Sure. We support parents navigating the child protection system through our workshops and our one-on-one therapeutic support. So when parents have had their children removed, or if there's a safety plan in place and possible removal is imminent, we help parents to understand what the child protection concerns are, how the children have navigated home, the trauma that has been caused, the types of things that they need to do to be able to address those concerns, the services they need to link with. But we also help to advocate for services to get involved with these families to help make some changes. So what we've seen is a pattern of mental health, substance abuse, domestic violence, homelessness, all of these key factors being the reason why children are at risk, and the need for services to get involved and help to support them to address the child protection concerns.
And how do you go with some of these parents and families? Is it it's obviously a difficult conversation, but do you have breakthroughs?
Yeah, absolutely. We've just finished, we're in the middle of one of our last workshops of the year, but the last two workshops we've had data which states that at least 70 to 75% of the parents that engage with our workshop have gone on to have better outcomes. So that has been better engagement with the department, better engagement with the services, better contact with their children, and moving towards more positive orders, which might be, you know, we get involved generally in the investigation and assessment order to help parents to get to the point that they may be considered for reunification. And we see that they do move towards a reunification order to keep on doing that work. So we're definitely seeing some really good outcomes with parents that engage with us.
Well, that's positive, and it must be really rewarding to at least be able to say that. I mean, 75% is a great figure. How many families are you working with at the moment in this situation?
So currently we have 10 mums that are going through the workshop, and we're dealing with approximately 30 families right now, mums and dads, sometimes separately, sometimes together. And helping them, and they come to us voluntarily. There is no reason for them to come to us. It's not ordered specific, but parents are looking for changes. They're looking to make changes. They're looking to understand. And what we see is that when you actually provide information, education and support to parents, the majority of the cases, they want to make changes. They love their kids. They understand what has occurred. They understand that they have not made good choices and that children have suffered for that, and they want to make sustainable changes. A lot of them have grown up in care themselves. A lot of them have grown up in domestic and family violence, and so they are wanting to make changes. They just need the resources and the support to be able to do that.
You would have heard Frances Nelson's comments just before, and that's exactly what she was focusing on there, that sort of intergenerational concerns that we have, that it starts young and it continues through life and through to the next family unit. Is that where you need to try and redress the balance to stop it, to literally break that cycle?
Absolutely. We do definitely see generational cycles that occur, and parents that are engaged in our services have had trauma as children, and understanding as to why they've parented as part of our workshops, helping them to understand the reason why they parent the way that they do and the trauma bonds that happen. And so helping them to understand that and then trying to break that with support is definitely the thing, what we're trying to do here at the Riley Foundation.
It's a highly complex problem, and as you note earlier, it might be mental health, it might be drugs, it could be crime, a whole bunch of things are in there. Every case, I imagine, is very different and very specific. Do you have a starting point and a process in which you go through, or do you have to tailor-make the content and the information for each family situation?
Generally, the content is the same in that we have to understand what the case plan is saying and we get the concerns are, but it's a common theme. It's the majority of our clients are mums that have navigated domestic violence and family violence, and so helping them to link with services that will help them to understand the reasons why they have been in those relationships that they've been in and how to break their circle, how to identify unsafe people. So we're definitely, we are able to provide a lot of the same work to a majority of the clients because there is many of the common themes in this for our mums and our dads that are navigating this space.
I'm speaking with Nadia Berganetti. She is Chief Executive Officer and founder of the Riley Foundation. We're asking you if you'd like to join the conversation. Please do. 1-300-222-891 is the number to call. Of course, you can send a message on our text line as well. Georgia has called in. Now, Georgia, hi, thanks so much for the call. I understand you work in this space.
Yeah, I am a public servant. I worked in the public service for about 20 years. And I started a startup to try and create change in the space quicker. And the day after I launched my startup, I got a phone call to find out that my own little sister was in child protection and became an instant mum that way.
Georgia, I might just get you to hold for a moment because you're saying something really important there and you're just dropping in and out. So we'll just pop you back to our producers and they can fix the line up with you. That was Georgia. She works in this space and was sharing her experience. So I'll just go back to Nadia at the moment, Nadia Berganetti from the Riley Foundation. Do you work with social workers with child protection, or are you at arm's length and are in that practical and preparation support with the families that you're dealing with?
We absolutely work with the social workers in the department, and one of our biggest things is helping parents to understand the need for them to work collaboratively with the department workers. So helping to, if there has been any conflict or disagreements or misunderstanding, miscommunication, it is also our role to help parents to understand that and ensure there's clarity. So we actually go to meetings with parents and help to facilitate that communication to make sure that it's really clear and that everybody's understanding what is needed for the sake of the children. So absolutely, we're in the DCP offices a lot.
Okay. We'll go back to Georgia now, who's on the line. Georgia, thanks again. Now, you were just saying you work in this space. You've had a personal experience too. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah. So my younger half-sister, Savannah, is Aboriginal, and she's from the Chungaji Nation in Far North Queensland. And look, I can't sugarcoat what has happened. I mean, the you know, intergenerational poverty that has you know, being bestowed upon her community is huge. But I think what I wanted to focus on was not so much that, but on the sense of hope and the sense that I have seen that there are so many people across all sides of politics who are really, truly working together to try and make a big impact for our children, including families and including the communities who love and support them. And that there are pockets everywhere of people who really are trying to make a difference. We just need some more resources and some support.
And Georgia, is it that? Is it simply that we just need more resources, more funding, more people making this situation better?
Yeah, it is. Look, I'm not going to sugarcoat that either. I left the public service because I couldn't make change quick enough. I think things probably have changed a bit since I left the public service. But, you know, it comes down to, you know, how fast can we go? What are the resources and how can we get communication and support with our communities and our families to really get solutions that represent the best interests of children and keep the focus on children?
Well, look, thanks for the call and sharing your experience. Much appreciated. That was Georgia there. Nadia Berganetti, if I can come back to you, we hear that word so often, resources. Is that really the crux of it? Resources and at that, you know, before children are removed, trying to get in before they're taken away?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that when we're spending over 80% of our child protection budget on out-of-home care, there is an imbalance in the resources that are being applied to families that really need support. In that early intervention stage, people, we're having many COAL notifications that are getting made, so these families are on the radar, so it's possible to actually filter some support services in there and help them to unpack what's going on, which a lot of the times it is, you know, financial instability, it is housing, homelessness issues, unemployment, you know, drugs and alcohol, mental health. We do have that. What I also am seeing is a great shift in the industry or child protection sector wanting to come together and provide a solution as a unified body. So many of the organisations working together for a solution. And I think that we need to really understand this is not just the Department for Child Protection's responsibility and the Minister. It's all of us as an industry working together. We all have some great strengths in the work that we're doing. You know, we also need to bring health into the conversation. We need to bring human services into the conversation and all try and find a solution together, working together.
Is the leadership from the top, though, enough? Is the support that the government is giving the likes of the Riley Foundation and others enough to help you support the people that need it?
Yeah, so we're definitely underfunded in the work that we do. We receive a lot of our funding from a bit of grant, government funding, but most of our funding is from philanthropists and donations. So it's definitely underfunded. I would say most of our sector would say that we're underfunded in the work that we're doing. So I think that more could be done to support families in this space, absolutely.
Nadia Berganetti there, who is founder of the Riley Foundation. Helen Connolly is South Australia's Commissioner for Children and Young People. Hi, Helen.
Good afternoon, Caroline.
Thanks for being with us on this one. Do you feel that we're having the same conversation over and over? I think Frances Nelson probably summed it up really well in her 39 years, that she feels that this is something that she has been saying for all that time. And why do we find ourselves here still?
Yeah, look, and I've been around for 30-odd years and certainly we've been talking about early intervention, prevention, but it's a system that's constantly putting out fires and spot fires, and so it's a really difficult thing to move. I guess one of the things I think from what Nadia is saying is with some really important messaging in there around what we would call that kind of targeted intervention. So for people who we know there's a problem, how are we going to help them fix it? And I think what she was talking about was some important principles around treating people with a bit more compassion, understanding their care kind of situation, but that really important stuff around poverty and mental health and domestic violence and racism and how they're actually impacting on individual families, that kind of belief in that people can change. So part of this is about saying if we give people the right support, they do love their children, they just don't necessarily know at that point how to make it all come together. What is the support they actually want? Not what we're saying we've got to give you, but what's actually going to make the difference to them to actually be able to make those changes? And how do we get alongside them and work with them rather than this kind of authoritarian approach of you must do this and then we'll come and assess you? So I think they're really important kind of big changes and culture pieces that also go to some of the early intervention approaches that are required.
And how difficult is doing that sort of set against the backdrop of intergenerational issues, that which really is what it comes back to? You've learnt this when you were young and you've carried that through, you know, at which point do you sort of, you know, put the hammer down and say, right, we need to work on this now?
I guess, you know, one of the things we know is these what used to be called wicked problems, that's going a little bit out of flavour now, but essentially saying they're not evil, but they are really highly resistant to finding simple strategies. So they are beyond the capacity of one organisation or one system to respond to. They do require that collaboration. They do require system change, policy change, culture change and legislation change. And as Nadia was saying, they need a shift of resources. But they also need us as the community to say, actually, this isn't right to say that this is a department can kind of pick up all of the challenges that we've left unattended for decades. So we haven't had those kind of, we've stripped out a lot of those universal services that all parents need to feel like they can cope and that they're getting the support they need. Then we need those really targeted services for vulnerable families that are different, that say, okay, you've got a heightened sense, but we're not going to blame you for that. We're actually going to get alongside you and say, how can we make sure that this does stop with this generation? What's that going to take?
Helen, I might just stop you there for a moment. We'll just take a pause there at 1:30. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment. Talking about how to break the cycle around child protection and vulnerable children in our community. I'm speaking with Helen Connolly. She's the South Australian Commissioner for Children and Young People. Sorry to cut you short there, Helen, just a moment ago, but as you were saying, that this is not just focused on one group or one agency to be able to answer these questions and fix these problems. It's very much a whole of community and society issue to address.
Absolutely. I think the other thing is we have to recognise that the world has changed. You know, we created child protection systems, particularly in the 1970s. Most of the stuff that was coming through the door was physical and sexual abuse. And so we had a system that responded to that using a kind of investigative model, I guess. What now we're hearing is that the majority of things being presented are actually kind of chronic and have a cumulative harm rather than that kind of incident approach. So we need a different response. We actually have to get alongside community and say, what is it going to need? What does your community need for you to actually be able to look after your kids in the way that you want to, and the way that you know is the right way? But for a whole heap of reasons, you're unable to do that. So I do think it is a big shift that's required that needs all of those elements to come together.
When we talk about the current situation, and we know that there are 500 children across the state who have been identified as living in risky situations, police are heading out and they're checking on the welfare of those children. Is that the right response? Is that the role of our police, and is that the way that we should be going about it in terms of trying to prevent and step in early, or is there something better?
I do think that when you hear the stories of families who say that authoritarianism and exclusion from systems has been a feature of their life. So I think Frances said that they're present in the criminal justice system, but we also know in a lot of other, you know, lots of these kids get excluded from school, they are excluded from sport, they're excluded, they have a life of exclusion. So I do wonder about what happens when the intervention seems very authoritarian in nature, given that's not been the best fit for them generally. I think what we, when we look to places around the world that have done things differently, whether it be the UK or the US, that what they're talking about is really going back to basics and real community working alongside doing it differently. So it's about saying we can't, this isn't about rescuing children or blaming parents. This has to be a different response. So police, no, I'm not sure. It doesn't seem to me to be the way that we're going to get the best change in the system. Again, it seems a very incident-y kind of focus.
Especially as you were saying, and as Nadia also said, it's in terms of bringing people with you, you know, bringing them along for the journey, not pointing at them and saying, well, you're doing this wrong, and there's sort of that punitive approach, I guess.
And I think the other thing is, and, you know, we do this, I talk to kids in who are in alternative care frequently. One of the things, if we knew that when we took children away that their life was dramatically improved and everything was hunky-dory, that would be a different kind of issue. What we're saying is these children aren't doing well in these systems. So it's, you know, and that there's still kids talking about wanting to be with family, wanting to have connection to their identity and their community and their culture and everything else. So we actually have to take into account that kind of risk as well, not the immediate harm and safety issues, but the longer term implications on identity and belonging and value. And then that's part of the breaking of that intergenerational cycle. It has to be. You have to feel different about yourself and more hopeful about your future, and a sense that you can make it in order to make that change.
Well, look, we appreciate your thoughts on this. Helen Connolly there, South Australian Commissioner for Children and Young People. And there are programs that are helping children and parents do exactly that and feel differently about who they are and their place in the community. Ross Womersley is CEO of SACOS, and he's with us now. Hi, Ross. It is a very important conversation to have, and it's important also to be focusing on the solutions, the things that are working. Now, I understand that you evaluated the Playford 10 project. Let's get to the evaluation in a moment. Can you explain what that project is and who it was targeted at?
It was a project that actually commenced coming out of another project that Playford, the Playford